Welcome to today's episode of Teen Health Matters. Our topic for today is Get the Facts, Teens, and Sexually Transmitted Infections. We have our usual co-hosts today, Patrick Keefe and Grace Leachman, and we have several guests joining us today. So I'll hand it off to Patrick and Grace.
Hi, I'm Patrick with my co-host Grace here, and we're just going to jump right into this interview. Once again, this is a podcast about sexually transmitted infections. And so the first part of this is going to be our interview with adolescent medicine doctors, Drs. Trent and Rhonda. And so jump right into it. What are STIs? How common are they? And what are the most common ones?
Hi, this is Dr. Rhonda. I'm one of the adolescent medicine physicians at Johns Hopkins. I work actually in the adolescent and young adult clinic as an outpatient doctor along with Dr. Trent. So yeah, what is a sexually transmitted infection or sexually transmitted diseases? Those terms are both used commonly and interchangeably. From a health perspective, we actually consider those things the same thing. So these are infections that are spread through sexual contact and include things or named you may have heard before: chlamydia, gonorrhea, trichomonas, HIV. So infections that come from having sex with a partner. And, you know, this is a pretty prevalent problem. So there are actually about 20 million new cases every year in the U.S. of sexually transmitted infections. And unfortunately, adolescents make up a big burden of that. So actually about a half of all new infections are acquired by individuals between the ages of 15 to 24. So they're definitely, from our perspective, a very vulnerable and at-risk population.
So why should teens care about STIs?
For the biggest reason is that it affects them. And unfortunately, we use the term disparity, which is when we see higher rates in one particular group or another. And so from our perspective, there's a disparity. Unfortunately, the folks that are facing these in the greatest numbers are actually adolescents and young adults, the infections. And it should be on their radar, particularly because these infections, though many individuals with them may have no symptoms at the time of presentation, infections, if left untreated, can have long-term consequences on your health, ranging from, you know, abdominal pain or things like pelvic inflammatory disease, and long-term impacting things like fertility. And so if an individual wants to someday be able to have children, we know that untreated sexual infections can actually lead to problems with conceiving a baby later in life.
So for teens during their teen years, how can STIs affect them in the short term?
So in the short term, I think you can present. So one of the common things we may see for a young teenage girl might be that she notices that she has vaginal discharge, or a young man might notice that he has started having some pain when he urinates. I think discharge from the penis or from the vagina are something very common that we see, as well as pain with sex. You may notice a new rash, pain of the testicles. Things we always pay attention to are any discharge, which is just fluid from vagina or penis, any pain. And we always advocate for young folks when they come to our clinic is just know your body. And if there's something that's new or changed about your vagina or your penis or your mouth or your throat, these are always things that you want to talk about with your doctor. Sometimes what we see is that symptoms can come and go. So a young person may have a rash. For example, syphilis can present initially with a rash and then can go away. And I think many times folks think, well, then the rash went away, I don't have anything, but it actually do have the infection and it can lead to more serious complications. So we're very open in adolescent medicine. We talk a lot about our bodies, and this is a usual type of topics that we talk about. So you can always feel comfortable in with a doctor sort of disclosing this information, and it's important too.
So how are STIs spread, and can someone only be infected by having sex?
Basically, you know, what we're talking about is, you know, close sexual contact. So, you know, people use the sort of going all the way. You know, we do see a lot of adolescents who, you know, the concept of virginity is sort of a very personal issue for a lot of people. And so, for example, seeing young adolescents that have maybe unfortunately been the victim of a sexual assault or sexual trauma who may consider themselves not sexually active. Or, you know, we see sort of close genital touching, to be more specific. You know, we have, you know, teens who may have said, well, my penis was on the outside of the vagina or only went in for a couple of seconds. So it's basically, you know, if you have genitals touching, you know, in any way, you know, that you're at risk. of sexually transmitted infections, because it's the fluid that comes from the penis and from the vagina and sort of that close touching that puts you at risk. You know, there are some, you may have heard the advertisements for the human papillomavirus, or HPV. There was a Gardasil vaccine to prevent cervical cancer and penile cancers in young men. And there's evidence to suggest that even just close sexual contact, so bodies just coming close together, that there can be spread through that. Say if someone has it on the inner thigh and a sexual partner sort of touching around an HPV infection, that it can be transmitted that way. But traditionally, you know, we talk about, you know, penis and vagina, using your mouth for sex, that's mouth on a vagina, mouth on a penis. Inserting into the anus is also included. A lot of girls will say, I'm not sexually active, but may have had a penis and inserted into their rectum, and we consider that a form of sex. And you're at risk of infections that way as well. So it's really any, you know, contact with vaginal or penile fluid that can do it.
So how would a teen know if they have an STI, and are there always symptoms with them?
No, and I think that's one of the most, that's a great question, and I think it's one of the most important things to remember is that I'd say probably the majority of people who we see, you know, don't have symptoms. I mean, certainly a lot of people do come in, at, you know, like we said, with the vaginal discharge or penile discharge or pain or a new rash, but a good number of folks have no symptoms at all. And the Centers for Disease Control recognizes this as an issue, and they actually recommend for any female under the age of 25 that we actually have at least testing for sexually transmitted infections at least once a year. Now, there's some variation in sort of that. You know, what's missing actually, if you read on the CDC website, is that there's actually no routine testing recommended for men who have sex with women. There are different recommendations for men who have sex with men, but for men who have sex with women, routine testing is not recommended. But what they say is, one, if you have symptoms, that's certainly a reason to get tested as a man. And then they also say that you should consider sort of the community in which you live and who you're having sex with. Dr. Trent and I work within Baltimore City and know that demographic quite well, and we can tell you that sexually transmitted infections in our young boys are actually very common. Part of the controversy around the lack of recommendations for boys is that it's a proof around the long-term consequences in guys. For girls, they're more significant. We're talking about impacting your fertility, impacting your pregnancy, leading to adverse fetal outcomes. The problems that we see with men from a public health perspective are not seen as significant.
Especially since there's a lot of STIs don't have symptoms, how would a teen know if they're infected, and if infected, is there a cure?
From our perspective, we always say, we remind teenagers that you can't tell by looking at someone whether or not they have an infection. And, you know, we commonly see, you know, folks who may have had only one sexual partner, and it's their first sexual partner where they've gotten a new infection, like chlamydia, gonorrhea. We've had new sexual partners, first-time sexual partners, HIV contraction, and genital herpes. So sometimes you can see abnormal things like a rash on exam. You know, when you're having sex, you may notice a genital lesion. But, you know, I think the best way is, I actually encourage new couples to actually get testing together. So you have to protect yourself and be informed. So coming into clinic, meeting with your doctor, I think it's good practice before you're having a new sexual partner to have been tested. And you can say to your partner, look, I've been tested for chlamydia, gonorrhea, HIV, and I know that I do not have any of these infections. And that's part of a conversation you get comfortable with having before you start having sex. And protecting yourself from before, because we know that so many folks report not having symptoms. Unfortunately, we see a lot of young folks that end up with, you know, genital herpes because they never saw a rash on their partner. So really, I would work with the assumption that anytime you're having sex, that your partner could have a sexually transmitted infection, and to use condoms if you're going to have sex, is one of the best ways that you can prevent yourself from acquiring a new infection. Both partners should be tested, using condoms always, and having a conversation about whether or not you're ready or at the stage of having sex. I see it on the other end where somebody may have started having sex and they end up with genital herpes. And genital herpes is a lifelong infection, unlike chlamydia and gonorrhea, which can be treated with antibiotics and cured. Genital herpes is something that you then have for the rest of your life. And sometimes folks will say, well, gee, if I had known that I could get this infection that's never going to go away, I would have not had sex. You know, this person wasn't that special to me in retrospect. So I think being deliberate about who you're choosing and whether or not you'd be willing to have this infection for the rest of your life. So the treatable ones, to be clear to your question, are chlamydia, gonorrhea, trichomonas, mycoplasma, syphilis. These are treatable. Sexually transmitted infections, lifelong infections are included in that, HIV and genital herpes. And human papillomavirus, or HPV, most folks with a healthy immune system will clear it on their own, but we do not routinely test for HPV in most folks, and there's not a really good way to determine whether or not you've cleared that infection or not.
So you mentioned the use of condoms as one method, but what are some other methods teens can use to prevent the spread of STIs?
Using some of my pop culture here, I'm not sure if you saw on, this is a little bit of illicit television, How to Get Away with Murder. They were talking a lot about PrEP. This is pre-exposure prophylaxis. So this is a once-a-day medication called Truvada, which can be taken by folks who are at high risk of acquiring HIV. It's a daily medication. You take it every day, similar to a girl taking actually birth control. And if taken every day, it can reduce your risk of acquiring HIV. The CDC has very clear recommendations about who would be a candidate for this medication. And included in that are folks that may have had a sexually transmitted infection. So a young woman who sees this with gonorrhea, we think of that in the healthcare profession as somebody who would be at high risk of acquiring HIV. If you have a partner that you know is HIV positive and you're having sex, we certainly recommend still routine use of condoms to prevent it, but the PrEP medication or Truvada is known to lower that risk. That is also used, so it's basically, you know, to reduce your risk of HIV. So folks who are using drugs, because we see high rates of HIV acquired through needle drug use, or high-risk sex partners, people who pay for sex in exchange for drugs or in exchange for money are also at risk. Men who have sex with men are also in a higher risk category.
When and where should teens be tested for STIs, and what is involved in testing?
Luckily, your generation is kind of a blessing and a curse. You guys are a little bit luckier than us in that you have Dr. Google as our friend, where you guys can actually have access to this information, which my generation didn't have. But really great resources to know about are your health department, and we're going to hear from them in a little bit, which I think is great. So you can actually Google in your town, you know, what is your local health department? Baltimore City has a health department, Baltimore County, and these are locations where teens and young adults can get free access to testing for sexually transmitted infections. And free is a really important thing, and it's also important to say that it's confidential testing. In the state of Maryland, all teens can actually get access to birth control and testing for sexually transmitted infections, and they can do so confidentially. Many teens who we see are sort of concerned about the, you know, maybe discussing these topics with their parents. From our perspective, we think it's great to always talk about this with your parents because they're the people who know you best and love you, and so we always encourage that conversation to happen, but we respect it if you say that absolutely don't talk about this with my parents. So I think knowing about the health department is one way to do it. Also knowing about Planned Parenthood. You know, Planned Parenthood is a major source of information for adolescents and young adults. The Planned Parenthood website has a great overview of access to Planned Parenthood clinics where you can be tested, as well as information on all sexually transmitted infections and information on all birth control methods, including videos on how each method works and how effective they are. So I think those are really great resources for teens to know about. In theory, any pediatrician or doctor can offer you testing for sexually transmitted infections. A health suite on a college campus is a great place to go. In practice, sometimes there may be cost barriers associated with certain clinics. They may charge you more money, and that's where it's really useful to know about programs like the health department, because most of those sites either have free or low-cost testing for sexually transmitted infections.
So you mentioned that some of the most common STIs are treatable. How are those treated? Just through antibiotics, or are there more methods?
Antibiotics are the mainstay for the treatment. So for chlamydia, it is treated typically with a medicine called azithromycin, which is a pill, you know, usually taken multiple pills by mouth. gonorrhea requires actually an intramuscular injection at the same time, you know, also while taking pills. Trichomonas also requires pills. So for the bacterial sexually transmitted infections, those are going to involve antibiotics. Sometimes we see folks who we treat them for the infection and we see them in 3 months. And it's actually recommended by the Centers for Disease Control that anybody who's had an infection be retested, you know, that they're at high risk, so they should be tested within 3 months of their last infection. And sometimes we see folks and, you know, the most common thing we probably see is that, you know, they have the infection and their partner wasn't treated. And so then they are reinfected. But in, when there's good communication between partners and both people were treated, sometimes we see that they actually still have the infection. And that can be due to something called resistance, antibiotic resistance, which means that the bacteria have mutated in a way that the antibiotics don't work to it. And we're unfortunately seeing that pretty commonly with gonorrhea in the United States. There are high rates of bacterial infections. So such individuals may end up on alternative courses of antibiotics, which are not the ones we standardly use. For herpes, there is medication that's available to suppress Shigella herpes, so you have fewer outbreaks. There's a huge range. Some folks with Shigella herpes may have one outbreak a year, and some may have several a month. And in folks who have more common outbreaks, we may choose to put them on a medication to lower the rates that they have, and that's a daily medication that's used. And for HIV, there's enormous resources now for the treatment of HIV, and you know, it can range anywhere from taking one pill once a day to multiple pills. It just depends on individual patterns of infection. And in the immediate treatment, after you've been treated, we do counsel folks to abstain or not have sex for about 1 week's time to allow your body, you know, for their treatment to have had effect, and also advise that you notify all your sexual partners and have them treated. Now, I can't emphasize that enough because we just see it so common that folks fail to have their partners treated and then they end up with the infection again.
So where are some places that teens can learn more about STIs and prevention?
So I think the curse that I said with the internet is knowing that there's a lot of bad information or inaccurate or false information, but resources that I think of that have factually correct information would include the Centers for Disease Control. You can look up resources on sexually transmitted infections. There's actually teen-specific information. I do think of the Planned Parenthood website. So if you put into Google Planned Parenthood, sexually transmitted infections or birth control, that's a really great resource. Those are probably the most common that I would refer to. Things with the initials .gov are tend to be better because that means that they're put out by a health department, and so you can think of that information as being much more reliable. Sometimes local hospitals may have information on their the hospital website that links to the teen and adolescent clinics, but it would be suspect of somebody who, you know, if it's not put out by a major medical institution or government organization, I would sort of be maybe potentially suspicious of the information that's linked to it.
So I was just going to add that it sounds like a lot of information for like a young person to take in, a lot of diseases, a lot of things going around. But I think that the key thing to remember, this is like STD Awareness Month. It's a great time for us to talk about sexually transmitted infections. About 1 in 2 sexually active people will get an STD before they're 25 years of age. And so it's an opportunity for young people to actually take ownership over their health. And so one of the American Sexual Health Association that I work with actually has a campaign that started this month, Yes Me. Test. If you said sex, yes to sex, that means you need to say yes to the test. And I wanted to add that they actually have a website. It's called yesmeanstest.org. It's not .gov, it is .org. But it's the oldest public health organization in the world, certainly in America. And they have been doing campaigns that go back in time. But this campaign allows you to actually go onto a website to put in your zip code and to find out where you can get free or low cost confidential testing for sexually transmitted infections. The other thing is, I think that young people have to know that they're in control of their sexual health. Most of these sexually transmitted infections are completely preventable. So people can not have sex. That's always the option that I'm not sure we discussed today. People can be choosy about who they have sex with. The thing to remember is that for most of the diseases, you can't see whether or not somebody has an STI. You cannot see it, right? The person can look good, smell good, walk nicely, they can be completely wonderful and have an STI. And so the key thing is just taking ownership of testing, talking to your partner, because the other big impact that sexually transmitted infections have is on relationships. And I think I was here a couple months ago talking about relationships and how important they are to young people. And so being empowered in your relationship, I think, also prevents sexually transmitted infections.
So I just also wanted to recommend teenhealthmatters.org. On our website, we have a link to also finding local places for free and confidential STI testing for youth.
I think the last thing is, again, as teen doctors, people always think that we don't communicate with parents, but that's not true. I can't emphasize enough how important I think that the role of parents in this conversation is. You know, sometimes, you know, it can be uncomfortable to begin these dialogues, and actually just coming into your doctor's office is one great way to start it, having a conversation with your doctor, and we're great resources to facilitate these conversations with parents. But over and over, I think when we see young teens and adults even speaking about this with their parents, after they've had that conversation, they're like, hey, that wasn't as bad as I thought. And I realized that my mom and dad are actually really knowledgeable about these topics and remembering how much they care and love about you and how they want to help keep you safe. So I can't emphasize enough how important I think that parents do play a key role in here.
Yeah, while on the subject of communication, how can teens talk to their partners about STIs? Because I'm sure that's a major barrier for many teens, you know, having that mature conversation with their significant other. So what are your guys' suggestions?
Yeah, I mean, it can be an uncomfortable conversation. And I think sort of that sometimes even admitting to that is something that's really important. But, you know, I think honesty and open communication are probably the big keys to a successful relationship at any age. And so I think speaking honestly with your partner. Sadly, sometimes I see young folks and I'll ask them, who are they having sex with? And they'll tell me, you know, the name of their partner. And I say, you know, do you think your partner is having sex with anybody else? And they'll say, I don't know. And I'm always like, you know, this is your body. This is, you know, the way to protect yourself. And you should feel empowered. I can think of nothing more personal than, you know, kind of sharing yourself sexually with somebody. And I think if you're going to go to that level, I think the conversation needs to match what you're doing physically and sort of being empowered, you know, just empower yourself and talk with the people who know you best, your friends, your family, about those and maybe the barriers that you're having and having those conversations. Most partners want to talk about those things, and it's much easier to talk about it before than after you've been diagnosed with chlamydia and now you have to tell your partner. It's a much more awkward conversation once you have a sexually transmitted infection. I'll also say if a partner is sort of mean or negative when you're trying to approach them about such a conversation, that's a red flag to me. I'd be concerned about the healthiness of that relationship that two folks feel like they can't have that conversation. And I'm not so sure I would be trusting myself with a partner who didn't feel like I could have that conversation with them.
I think you also have to know yourself. I think it's very hard to go into a conversation without having any idea what your thoughts or values or ideas are about what do you want to see happen. I think people can be very easily swayed because another person has a plan. The other person comes into the conversation with a plan. So I think that if you know, for example, going into a relationship that it may be progressing towards sex, and you know for a fact that I don't want to get a sexually transmitted infection, having a plan to talk about, well, I think we need to use condoms. I think young people also have to be willing to walk away. I think sometimes that's hard when somebody's looking good and smelling good and saying sweet things. I think that's very difficult. But I also think that people would be surprised that when they actually stand on their own principles, they say, well, you know, you say to a person, you know, I'd really like to have sex with you too, but, you know, we can't have sex unless we can agree on condoms today. And oftentimes the person who doesn't want to use a condom probably wants to have sex more than they want to, more than they don't want to use a condom. And so I think young people have way more power in relationships than they think they do. It's weird. It's weird to talk to your parents about sex. It's weird to talk to your partner about sex because it's the first time you're talking about these things for many people. But oftentimes when you begin to do it, you realize that you actually have more power over the situation, over your own health, than you think you do. And I think taking that first step, I think, is critically important for young people.
Thank you so much, Drs. Trent and Rhonda, for giving us all that information about STIs.
You're not wired to have a response to this sound, But when we introduce a new stimulus, save the food, we're helping to stop food waste. Save the food. For tips and recipes, visit SaveTheFood.com. Brought to you by NRDC and the Ad Council.
Transforming together.
Love is not always enough, and it's wonderful and it's beautiful, but if you love someone and there's not other things missing, like trust or communication or clear expression of expectations and needs and desires, it's okay to say this isn't working anymore.
Join in the conversation Tuesdays at 5 p.m. and Sundays at 3:30 p.m. Or just check it out on our podcast, Dragon Digital Radio, at podbean.com. We are Dragon Digital Radio.
Hello, Kubo. What have you got planned for today?
Come on, this way.
Adventure can be found anywhere, but the best place to start is in the forest.
It's the most powerful magic there is.
Head outside to discover incredible animals.
Wow.
And beautiful plants that come together to create an unforgettable adventure. So grab your loved ones and explore a world of possibilities. Visit discovertheforest.org to find the closest forest or park to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Forest Service.
Next up, we have members of the Howard County Health Department staff, Ms. Reid and Ms. Alateju. First question, can you tell us about the health department programs to help educate about STI prevention or helping a teen who wants to be tested and treated?
Sure. We perform STI testing every day at the health department. We do it by appointment, but we can also take walk-ins depending on the situation and how the clinic is going. We screen for chlamydia, gonorrhea, and other STIs, but for chlamydia and gonorrhea, if you have no symptoms, it's just a urine test. We may collect specimens from any site that needs testing, penis, vagina, throat, rectum. We also test for syphilis by taking blood. HIV we can do by taking blood or by a Oroquick, which is just an oral swab. We offer a full range of contraceptives as well as providing a lot of education and take-home brochures and information on STIs. As far as cost, we can bill your insurance if you like, or if not, we do a fee fee scaling based on your income. If you have no income, then your charges will be very minimal. Many times, it can cost as little as $5. We also offer immunizations such as HPV vaccine, series of 2 or 3 vaccines with that, or Hep B vaccines, and many others. Another thing we offer is disease intervention specialists can do partner notification if you need help notifying a partner if you haven't been able to have that conversation that's so important. We can help with that and do it confidentially and anonymously.
So you mentioned you guys take patients by appointments. How can a teen schedule an appointment?
A teen can schedule an appointment by calling the phone number 410-313-7500, which is our front desk number at Howard County Health Department.
Does a teen need parental permission to seek services?
No, they do not. I think we mentioned this earlier, but no, in Maryland, no parental consent is needed. A minor or who is a person under the age of 18 has the same ability as an adult to consent to treatment for or advice about STIs and contraception.
So I know we were able to cover a lot in today's episode, but is there anything else that you guys would like to add, you know, working at the health department within Howard County? Any ideas?
So to round everything up, we just want everybody to know that at Howard County Health Department, we have a friendly staff who are willing to work with you and your needs. We have an STI clinic at HCC in the Wellness Center for HCC students only. And this clinic is open 2 Thursdays in a month during school sessions. We also have a family planning clinic that offers services, and my colleague has mentioned, you know, some of the services. But again, the remaining services are, you know, annual screening, gynecological exams, and this includes Pap tests and pregnancy testing.
So that concludes our episode of Teen Health Matters. Make sure to stay tuned for our next episode.